Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Star Wars Minute. It's the daily podcast where we analyze, scrutinize, and celebrate the Star Wars movies 1 minute at a time. I'm Pete the Retailer from PeteTheRetailer.com.
I'm Alex Robinson from AlexRobinson.fun.
And I'm Chrysanthi Tan from howtopronounce.com/Chrysanthi.
Well, I shouldn't, if I'm on my game right now, I'll include the little sample of how it says it on there, but perhaps I'm not. Who knows?
Chrysanthi.
That's up to the listener and the viewer.
I just told you the link, so
yeah,
feel free. Even though I just told you how to pronounce it, if you need to prove it by looking at a website,
right.
I just told you.
Right. Everybody, I'm gonna let the individual check that out. So if somebody needs to back that up, go to the website, check it out.
Fanthier.
And then exactly. Then come back and hear us talk about minute 58 of Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. 58 starts with Rose saying red plum bloom. Red plum bloom. And it ends with Rey training with her staff. We start out kind of, they notice the red, well, first BB-8 kind of pulls up to let them know what's up. Mm-hmm. And I do, as much as I have mixed feelings about the BB-8 being full of coins gag, I do like that they committed to it, that every time he rolls around from here on in, you hear him jingle like he's full of coins. I love that they committed to it and stuck with it. And so I like that.
Ka-ching theory.
So the music goes, red plum bloom. Nope, that was a terrible representation. It's like this orchestral thing where it like,
right.
It sort of, I don't know, it's reminiscent of some like old movies.
Like
where it's like,
when we see him.
So over the top scored. Yeah, when they see the red plum bloom and then it's like this syrupy like string thing and then it's like, and then it's like this action cue where it's like,
yeah.
I can't do it because it's like a whole orchestra, but it is really, it's funny, it's delightful, and it doesn't last too long.
Yeah. No,
it ends with them being apprehended.
It's a perfect little, like, you know, this is the kind of, you know, fantasy thing that they're looking for. So not to fantasy, but like it does, he seems a little bit out of time. You know, like a
it's from another movie.
Character from another reality. Yeah, almost. And it's and this music kind of goes with that. They're like, oh, this is what we're looking for. And that's exactly
And when the music stops, it's not replaced by a different part of the score. It's like the music stops for a while. It's like party's over. And then they, you know, he throws BB-8 out and it's in silence when he's like throwing BB-8 out. That's not scored. It's just like BB-8 thuds. One, two, and then it cuts to Rey's staff, of course.
Yeah.
In a 1, 2, 3. It's like in time. It's like thud, thud.
I like it. So we get the there's a whole alternate reality here that's interesting. I said I was going to talk about it a little bit because we get a little. This is a, we see the Master Code Breaker, whose name is purely the Master Code Breaker. If I were, side note, sidebar before we get to anything, if I were the proprietor of a casino, I would not invite somebody named the Master Code Breaker to play any of my games of skill or chance. It seems like he would be somebody that would be able to have an unfair advantage.
Because of
why?
Yeah, well, why?
Because he's like a code breaker. He's adept at kind of noticing the patterns and doing. It seems like he'd be obviously be, you know, counting cards, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. I don't know. To me, I wouldn't allow, but maybe that's why I don't own a space casino.
I think it's the only thing stopping you from owning a space casino is your refusal to let him in.
I applied.
Maybe that's part of their selling point, is that they're like, hey, we're so confident in our games, we'll let anyone come. Do you think you can beat it? Come on, Master Code Breaker.
Like those.
And also, we don't really know if he's a good code breaker or not.
Caljack is a card counter. He's very good at that.
There you go.
It's like his species is really good at math and remembering all those numbers. But I still think it's frowned upon. What I am wondering, actually, and I meant to look this up, but is what if a Jedi went, like, wouldn't a Force user have the most advantage?
Yeah.
But then I'm like, okay, would a Jedi go there? But
also, don't forget,
but
no
it could
one...
be a different type of Force user. I don't know. I can see. How would they know? How would they monitor that?
Also, I'm reading an update here in the Visual Dictionary. It says the Kanto Casino only lets the Codebreaker play dice games and forbids him from any electronic form of entertainment.
There you go.
You might be onto something there, Pete.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's funny.
I'm back in. I do, like, you know, because we imagine flashback to Qui-Gon influencing the chance cube, you know, like if there were people like Rey who, you know, have been kind of in touch with this thing that they don't know what it is, and they used it to win at dice games. Maybe that's, you know, who knows? There are people like that, maybe. That would be a fun story to tell.
You would think all the dealers would be like Toydarians and...
Right.
You know, who can't be swayed. maybe they have those, what are those worms called that suck, that stop the force from being used? Maybe they're all like under each table. There's one of those creatures. Right. So,
wait, what are you talking about?
In the old canon, I think it's still only in the old
ones
canon.
That Thrawn has on his...
Thrawn walk around with this like slug on his shoulders. Okay. The slug stopped people from using the force.
Is it more like an aardvark?
I don't know. I don't remember having limbs or anything. I just remember like a big fish, kind of. Yeah, but I don't know if those are still canon or not. We'll have to, one of our listeners will have to give us a call, let us know that. But yeah, it does seem like running a casino in a world where people have, can read minds and also can manipulate objects with their minds seems like a losing proposition.
Right. Well, unless they're just paying so much for drinks that it doesn't matter.
It's true. You want to talk about behind the scenes with the Master Code Breaker for a second?
Yes, I wanted to do that too, so go forth.
He is played by Justin Theroux, former Mr. Jennifer Aniston. I was also surprised to learn that he wrote the script for Iron Man 2.
Is he in it too?
I do not know.
Is he in Iron Man 2?
Iron Man 2, too. It's one of those Hollywood families. Or not Hollywood, but they're also, they're just like, yeah, there's a lot of them and they just do stuff.
Yeah.
And they do all kinds of stuff. And, you know.
I don't like seeing a recognizable actor playing this part in such an ostentatiously recognizable, like.
He wasn't recognizable to me.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Where do you recognize him from? I did not know who that was either. I just like, oh, there's a handsome guy.
I recognize him from he was on the television program The Leftovers.
Okay.
And he's been in a few other movies.
A cooking
like
show?
But still, I didn't recognize him.
Right. And also he was apparently literally cast the day before shooting started.
Yeah. And. But you read the same thing that I did, that they had Neil Scanlon had a giant insect warlord creature ready to go as the Master Codebreaker. That was supposed to be the one that they were there to find, and they were like, all right, we got it ready, and they're like, oh, hang on. We've got Justin Theroux for the part. So
yeah, the fact that he doesn't
did they call him in because the other thing didn't work, or were they like, oh, we have an opportunity to put Justin Theroux in, so scrap the alien?
I think it was more that.
Oh.
Yeah. I was wondering if the alien wound up becoming Lady Proxima, because it sounds a lot like what Lady Proxima would wind up being in Solo, which is like a giant, like, praying mantis-y kind of alien. So, well, anyway.
She's more wormy, right? I don't know. Interesting, yeah. I would want to see that... you know, I'm excited about the eventual slow release of more behind the scenes information about all these movies that we'll get to learn more and more about, you know, like, oh, here's what that was repurposed as. Here's what that was going to look like. It would be interesting if that was completely not, you know, they just tossed it completely and we get to see a design that got entirely unused.
Yeah. But knowing that, and as someone who did recognize Justin Theroux, it's kind of like even more annoying in retrospect that right. It could have been a cool looking alien, but instead it was a friend of Rian Johnson's who just happened to be walking by the set that day, and they said, hey, let's put him in the movie.
Right. Well, I do like, as much as I would have liked the giant insect warlord, I also like the, it helps kind of with the fake out. Like, I like that he's this kind of ethereal, you know, like
dapper.
Yeah. Like, right. Like fantasy handsome dude. And then they're like, oh, there he is. And then it's just left turn. And we don't see him again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it too. But
yeah. I mean, that would have been a different thing. Although that also apparently was not, originally planned. Originally, they were going to meet up with him in a kind of a cabaret segment. They were like they're going to basically go find him in a one of the other rooms of the casino or the resort, and they were going to get kind of wrapped up in a side quest to find a like an artifact that was in a missing backpack or something like that. And then they were going to go on a little quest with him and eventually get arrested as part of that.
Trying to break into his apartment or whatever.
Yeah. And so there was this whole other, like, I don't know if that was all, were those two excised together? Where was that storyline only to involve the insect warlord, whereas they had, once they switched it to Justin Theroux, they're like, we only have him for a day, so let's just do this one bit, and then we'll just have them get arrested right there. Mm. Or were they planning on doing it with, you know, with the, once they, after they had him cast, were they like, oh, and then we'll get him, and they'll go with him, they'll hang out with him for a while, and this is great, we got Justin to do this. Well, at what point did it become a cut scene? And apparently it was late enough in the game the aforementioned novel, but Jason Fry wanted to keep that. He liked that segment, wanted to keep it in the...
Rian Johnson as well.
Oh, really? Keep it in the book.
Yeah.
But then everybody was like, well, you can't have the book be that different than the movie. The book is different than the movie, but...
it's a lot of weird... I can't imagine them, as it is, they already got, people got complaints about this being a lot of build-up for no real payoff, so if they added a whole nother layer of a heist thing of them breaking into a place, that would certainly be
would that have added more...
Would that have justified its existence by having a more exciting side quest?
Right. Like, if they did more before they got arrested on Cantobite, would that have satisfied people's, you know, would have mollified people with their complaints about this?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So in addition to Justin Theroux as the master codebreaker, we also see his companion Lovey, who gets name dropped.
Lovey.
Or nickname dropped, because apparently that is not her real name. She refuses to give him her real name, so he just calls her Lovey. That's what it says in the visual dictionary.
Assuming her real name is Eunice Wentworth Howell.
Played by model actress entrepreneur Lily Cole, who's apparently a somewhat known person. So apparently, like, just like I was like, oh, look, that's Justin Theroux. There are other people who theoretically could be like, oh, look, that's model entrepreneur Lily Cole. Apparently, she plays herself in a lot of her projects. So more famous, I guess, as a British person. So I like her haircut, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the designs. And her outfit is cool, too. You get to see a better picture of it in the visual guide, but her dress,
yeah,
the pattern is on it, or simple but cool.
Yeah. Is there something inside her hair, like, or do you think that's all just hairspray, or what is it, like, how was something like that kept?
You mean,
anyone have any idea how something like that is kept up
in real life or in the
either way? Even in the movie, is there like a piece of foam in there which the hair is wrapped around, or is it just all hairspray and mousse and such? Clearly, none of us know for sure, so just throwing it out there.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's some kind of cage, you know, some kind of infrastructure, like a what's that called? The wires that you put inside, like a
the plants.
Or like a armature wire, something like that, where they made they made the basic shape of it, covered it all with hair, and then just kind of plopped it on her head and mixed it in with her some of her real hair potentially.
Would you guys want to visit, if you had to scratch that, if you had to work in one of these places, would you want to work in Canto Bite, Mos Eisley Cantina, or Maz's Pub?
I'm
Maz's.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna go with Maz's, because it seems like the
Maz's is like the middle ground between them, like the scum and villainy of the cantina versus the scum and villainy of this bright, beautiful place. And Maz's is kind of in the middle there, like a.
And the people that, you know, not the clientele necessarily, but the at least we know Maz's is probably pretty cool to work for.
Well, she's very anti-union.
Well, or pro-union. We don't know. It's a union dispute. But
as a business owner, she's probably more anti.
But yeah, Wurr seems like you would be a pain to work with or schedule around.
Well, I just don't want to work in Mos Eisley. I'd rather be on Takodana.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
It's a much better location.
Much better sociologically, the environment. In
weather.
What sense is it?
Well, first of all, the weather seems nicer. I mean, I don't know. There's like forests and.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's
more
not just a.
Climate.
Yeah, the climate seems nicer. Mm-hmm. It seems like there's places to hike when it's your day off.
Oh, no days off.
There's some water you can look at. There's. in view. It just seems like a better place to live.
You know, I'm going to reverse course here, and I'm going to say, as an adult, the place that I would want to work at more is going to be Canto Bight, because I think as a teenager, I had a couple of little jobs here and there that were for people who thought they were better than me. In situations like this, where there are people who wanted to make a big deal about letting you know that they had more money than you and stuff like that. And I
I was a working cartoonist. I've
had tons. I'm so used to that too. Think of the people that I've performed for some people that just.
But now
I would probably, honestly, realistically, I'd probably be someone who just works at all of them, just a lowly musician.
You were touring. Makes the rounds. You'd cover all of them.
Yeah.
Now as an adult, I think I could suck it up more, and being around people who have too much money and are drinking seems like it could be a good, like, I would do that for a while and then be able to get out with, like, you're going to get a lot better tips potentially at Canto Bight. Not everybody. There'll be people who are, you know, famously people who have a lot of money tend to not tip well and not treat people in the service industry well, but there will be the occasional, I think it'll make up for it in the number of people that are just drunk and don't know money doesn't mean anything to them, and so they will purely on a capitalist level, I'm going to say, all right, I'll suck it up and I'll work Canto Bight.
So you're assuming you're in a service industry on Canto Bight. You're assuming you're a bartender, basically. Right. Okay.
Or the retailer. I'm working in the gift shop at Canto Bight.
Right. Okay. The reason that I wouldn't choose Canto Bight, even though it seems, it seems like the bathrooms would be clean and, you know, there would be some amenities that I like to have. In environments like that, you sort of always feel like you could lose your job at any time for something that you don't even know. Like, I the anxiety of being on thin ice all the time, just because, like, who knows? Like, people get fired left and right. Like, oh, next person in line. Like, I feel like I just wouldn't even keep a job there for very long.
Mm. But you wouldn't need to. You just get a couple of those tips and then bounce. I don't know.
I doubt that they're paid
probably not
very well.
Anyway. I'm going to go with Canto Bight, but kind of along the lines of what you were saying, Peep. I would, as soon as I got there, I would immediately start planning a heist or some kind of like way of taking advantage of being around all these rich people.
Right.
Okay.
You know, to earn your place Canto in Bight. The story. Anthology or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Get immediately involved in the criminal scene. Mm-hmm. Find your friends.
Yeah. I think that's what I would do.
All right.
Slow and Low shows up in this one, right?
Slow and Low. Let Yourself Go. I love that is the, you know, it's the this kind of fantasy of like, oh, there he is. We've achieved our goal. Here's the master code breaker. And then just, you know, like, I bet they debated a record scratch in there of like, you know, like you said, the music stops and all of a sudden here's this like, they're, yep, that's them. They're the shuttle parkers or whatever he says. And it's just like, oh, that harsh disconnect between, you know, fantasy world, we're achieving our goals. And then, you know, this kind of, this goofball stops in and then they get tased. The Slow and Low gets a new high score in Tase Crazy. because the police come in and they get zapped. I bet I want Finn to ask, yeah, see, now you see how that feels? How does that, do you like that?
Because what if Rose tased back? Like,
yeah, exactly. Have a tase battle.
Yeah.
I also like that all it took was the word of Slow and Low and that they immediately get zapped for illegal parking.
Like, right.
That's a pretty cutthroat world where that just parking in the wrong spot is enough to get you zapped just on the word of some guy going, there they are.
Well, it's obvious that they don't belong there. Everybody was giving them looks.
Yeah.
And then not only they didn't just park their car, like, you know, in the wrong spot, they just like parked it, you know, in the middle of the beach.
Right, but in most cases, like, if that happened on Earth, they would tow your car away, and then that would be the end. The, you know, you'd go back to your car and be like, what the hell? I doubt they would pursue someone into the casino and actually tase them for parking.
In places like this, they try to keep it looking very nicely manicured.
Right, yeah.
They also just want to.
Finn is armed, which in the Visual Dictionary, it specifically says arms are not allowed in public places. So maybe that's why they zapped him, because they're look out, he's got a gun. So,
like, if you... Let's say, like, what's a like the Met? If you went to the Metropolitan Opera House, or Carnegie Hall, or something, you know, a famous place where people, people in Manhattan go and often have money. If you parked your car on the steps of Carnegie Hall and went in with a gun and were just kind of walking around looking at people.
Yeah,
And then they might come in and arrest you after somebody confirmed that that was the guy that parked there. They might come in and tase you.
Fair enough.
Is supposed to be, Candlebite is supposed to be like Monaco, right?
Right. Do the Monaco police, are they armed? I'm sure they are, huh? But who knows?
I don't remember. I don't know. I've been there, and it actually kind of looks like Candlebite. It's beautiful, and there's a big casino. Then there's a casino.
Where'd you park?
I was on tour, so I didn't have my own vehicle. I had a plane.
You parked on the roof of the casino.
But
we see one of my favorite aliens who I've not been able to track down a name for him. He looks kind of like, he has long white hair and a giant forehead. He almost looks like Riff Raff from Rocky Horror, if someone had pulled Riff Raff's face down. Where his
when do you see him?
When they're being after the he says, oh no, I'm on a lucky roll or something, and he rolls and everyone's like, yeah, and then you see him, he's one of the guys cheering about the about how good he's doing. He has long white hair and a giant forehead, and in the movie it looks like he doesn't even have a face, but when you look at him, I did find a picture of him online, and he does
I know what you mean. It looks like his eyes are like, well, he's all mouth.
I thought he was gonna look more like that guy from Rogue One with the big mouth. What's his name? Ack or something like that, you know what I'm talking about? Anyway,
on the balcony, we're not on the balcony. Did we already talk about Durla? We saw Durla at some point, who is like this creature with four eyes, an alien with four eyes. No, I may have been on the balcony yesterday. Well, we passed a sommelier, and she was on the balcony with Rose and Finn talking to the alien with the like inhalers on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like just two other random people on the balcony in the background with them. Drinking some very fancy looking wine. And so, just so you know, she's a very respected sommelier in the galaxy. Yeah.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what do they make wine out of, and what?
It's actually very similar to Earth wine. There's a lot of wine tasting in the book, and basically, there's two people. You would have seen them last week, but the first person we see on the balcony is Yubiala Gil. Did you talk about her? The nightclub owner?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Yubiala is like in this race with Durla, who we see on the balcony, over this rare bottle of wine, and they're trying to get it from the Grammys sisters, who you may have talked about last week, too.
A little bit. That bothers me for some reason.
The sisters?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Why?
But their names bother me.
Oh, Ramba and Parallella?
Yeah.
Well, get a load of this.
Whoa.
Very cool.
Yeah.
In the audiobook of Cantobite, they talk as if it's two voices.
Ooh.
Always. And it's like the most ostentatious thing ever. It's like, which sister am I? Am I Rombi or am I Parallella? It's constant.
They actually it's speak constant. In the audiobook? What are they? Is it just
yeah,
like...
the audiobook has like, you know, there's voices. Yeah. So however they did the voices for different characters is the sisters always speak in this like doubled situation.
Come and play with us.
It's very creepy. And everyone is always vying for the sisters' attention. They're like, they don't come from anywhere. They say they're from, no one knows what world they're from and no one's ever seen another species like them. It's like this whole thing.
I guess
like the names.
If those are stage names that they chose themselves,
they are performance artists, so it is possible that that's like a stage name.
But it bothered me a little bit.
Me too.
But yeah, I can't find. I see the name of the other. I was looking more for the that other guy at the table, and I can't. I found all kinds of other ridiculous things that we don't really get a good view of. There's so many things kind of just deeply buried in this canto bite scene.
It's crazy to contrast it with the cantina in the original Star Wars, just because, you know, like they did one version of it and George Lucas is like, we need more alien. We can't just have this pathetic little thing. So they just had more pull on masks. And here you have like, you have enough to staff like 20 cantinas with all these aliens. And some of them you barely see for like a second. It's great.
Well, I feel like this scene is like something George Lucas may have liked. Did he like this scene?
Probably.
Yeah, I feel like this is Rian Johnson being like, George Lucas would have liked to have a lot of aliens.
I think he thought it was too slow and not intense enough.
Like, when do we see? Do we see this? It's when I guess it's a little bit later when they bust through and then we.
Are you talking about Ubla Mulbro?
I don't know the Jakun, but we'll get to that, I guess. let's see. We do skip. Do we want to do anything else? We cut at the end of this to Octo and Rey, kind of doing some individual training, with Rey's famous staff. Do we have anything to talk about that? Or it carries over into tomorrow. Yes. So you want to talk about it now? You want to talk about it?
Yeah, a little brief intro.
Please.
We cut to Rey jousting with her staff.
Mm-hmm.
And we just hear, you know, a lot of ambient wind and soundscape noises in the background of Octo.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to point out that those sounds take a lot of effort. It sounds like just wind noises and everything, but it's a very specific ambiance, and I just want to shout it out for getting so it gets the attention that it deserves or doesn't deserve, because it doesn't need it. I just want to call attention to it.
I wonder how much, how much of that is like when they were, you know, filming at Skellig Michael, where they're like, all right, let's get a lot of wild sound while we're here, so we can just lay this kind of ambiance down there, or how much of it was just kind of, you know, created in a lab, essentially, at Skywalker Sound.
So, not to constantly do this, but 2 weeks ago on Star Wars Music Minute,
that wasn't a setup.
The guest. Oh, thank you. The guest and I went through some possible synthesized explanations of how they could have made that wind sound. So there's like a lot of examples of like doing a synth. You know, like making a synth sound like a white noise sound, and then using different filters to cut off the high end and the middle and the low, and how like adjusting that filter can make the wind sound like it's going ooh. And so how the guest was positing that they probably had some natural sounds, but then were infusing it with, you know, like synthesized, more controlled versions so that
sweetening
you
it
could
up.
Have both going. Yeah. So that you could actually control like when the wind, you know, changes and goes kind of up and down, because there are certain points in this film where you clearly want the wind to be like more go up, and sometimes you want where you want it to go down and to convey certain emotions.
Hmm.
So would that be like a keyboard, like a piano keyboard, or would that be like a typewriter keyboard? It's funny. It's just funny to me to imagine.
Oh, like when
playing.
I say synthesizer, you mean?
Yeah. So you're talking about like a piano keyboard type of.
Well, actually, synthesizer just implies like something that can produce a sound wave, and we're used to seeing it in the form of something that looks like a keyboard, but mm-hmm. it can really be just like anything that can synthesize a sound wave.
Right.
So like a sine wave would be like the purest, just up and down, mm-hmm. you know, nice wave. So you can just have like these things called oscillators, and they are the things that shake, you know, they create the wave. And then when you kind of juxtapose different oscillators, it makes the sound waves interact in different ways. And that's all synthesizers are. So synthesizer, like pianos or like synthesizers, if you think of like what a sine wave sounds like it's what the audiologist would play if you're getting like a hearing test. It's just that very pure, mm-hmm. it's not very textured sound. If you think like synthesizers are basic synthesized sounds, so we're used to seeing it as keyboards, but it could be any.
There are other ways of.
There are many, yeah.
Right. I just like the idea of someone playing wind on the.
Yeah, I like it too.
You know, I'm picturing like the kind of like old school, you know, like radio, TV, like just the person with the knob that says wind, and they're turning it up and down depending on watching the movie, and it's like a big, you know, like hand sized knob, and like more wind, less wind.
Yeah, and what they might be doing is it might just be adjusting the resonance filter.
Yeah. On that note, speaking of filters, this is a stretch, right? Why not? You wanna talk to us more, find out what we're talking about on a day-to-day basis? Why not find us on social media where you can filter out the words and accounts that you don't like? See, I was trying to bring it back around. We are on Twitter at Star Wars Minute. We're on Instagram at The Star Wars Minute. Facebook, go to StarWarsMinute.com/Facebook to get to the Star Wars Minute Listeners Society, which we were all gone from for a while, but I have since returned and...
Return to the king.
It's a fun place to be. Hopefully we will see you all back here tomorrow for a brand new Star Wars
Minute. Star Wars Minute.